two elections question time. What do your candidates stand for?
So welcome to your first episode of SU Election Question Time with me, Hermione. I'm joined here today by your candidates for the president role. So I've got Meg, Lewis, James and Liv here, all running spectacular campaigns, I must say. So the first topic that I wanted to cover was Lenten safety. Lewis, for starts, you talk about kind of increasing like patrols around Lenten and stuff like that. But how do you actually kind of plan on talking to the police?
So I've said quite a lot throughout my campaign so far. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the conversations haven't happened with the council and the police. But quite clearly, you know, it's hard to see a week where something hasn't happened in Lenten. But I also think it's important to consider all student areas, such as Beeston, Dunkirk, Radford is very bad as well, and we do have students there, and even on campus we've got bikes being stolen. But it is genuinely just sitting down with the correct people. Obviously I don't have any experience with that kind of situation, as I've never fortunately had to deal with the police before. But you look at the figures, you look at what's happening in Lenten. Obviously Jacob's done a lot of work on it this year. There's been a lot of petitions going around on Facebook. And it's just a case of, you see a lot of police officers between 7 and 11 when it's obviously the hot spot for students travelling to other students' houses for pre-drinks, for example. So they introduced the alcohol fines. Obviously the police are very active during 7 and 11 to fine students during them times. They disappear though when we need them most, and it's just pointing out that we do need them, especially between 11 and 4 o'clock in the morning, as the other candidates alongside me would agree. Liv started off her speech yesterday at the hustings saying, I don't feel safe walking through Lenten, you know, and a lot of students would say they don't feel safe walking anywhere in Nottingham.
That's what I was going to say. Liv, you obviously mentioned that you want to make Lenten safer, but yeah, how do you plan on doing that? You don't say in your manifesto what the plan would actually be.
Yeah, for that I completely agree with Lewis, like sitting down with the police and just having a serious conversation. I think obviously these talks have happened before, but the problem in Lenten is seemingly getting worse. Like, I don't know if it's just because I'm becoming more aware of it since like moving out of halls, but like most of my friends have been burgled, like people I know have been like harmed on the way, and it's just like it's getting such a serious issue that like these talks have to happen again, and we just have to keep talking to the police and have to get them to take us seriously, because like Lewis said, like they'll fine us, they'll tell us off for like walking down the street with alcohol, but then when people get burgled or hurt, like it what it looks like from the outside is like there's not much happening to kind of help us.
But how, I suppose, like obviously you say these conversations had happened,
yeah,
how do you plan on showing them like how bad the issue has become? Because I suppose like Nottingham Council can't be oblivious to it.
Yeah,
so how would you personally be like, this is one of my points that I need to achieve, how will I be different from what happened before and the conversations have clearly failed?
Yeah, well, it, as I said, it's on my manifesto, it's a priority for me, and if I were to be elected into the role, I would organise these talks very early on and sit down with them, compile loads of statistics, case studies, stories of students that it's happened to, look at which streets are kind of targeted the most, and just sit down with them and talk to them seriously, because it's an issue that we can't ignore anymore, and it's such a problem, and it just can't go on.
Yeah, James, you mentioned in your manifesto that you want to increase presence in Lenten. What do you mean by that? The presence of who?
So when I talk about presence, I'm more talking about Students' Union being in Lenten rather than stuff like safety. So this past year, the SU's been trialling, I'm not sure if they're fortnightly, but sessions in Croker's Cafe, where a couple of officers will be there or a few members of staff will be there to talk with students where they live, kind of thing. So that's the kind of thing I'm discussing when I'm talking about presence. And I mean expanding that style of event. So not, as I mentioned at hustings yesterday, not doing something grand and buying the bag of nails to have a big like base in Lenten or anything like that. I mean like working with the community, because we are the community. Like, we're not all of it, but we're also not just random people living in Lenten.
I think people before have often tried to work with the community, and I think there's a lot of resentment from the local community in Lenten about having students. So how would you overcome that?
I think that's why we need to start working in little local startups like the Crocus things, which have gone quite well. So it's not necessarily just going to people's doors and putting leaflets through, or vice versa, like the police have been doing recently. It's about going to the little startups like the Crocus Cafe, like the Lenten Center, like the, I can't remember its name, but the little charity thing that's set up on Lenten Boulevard recently. It's going to places like that and becoming, changing the image of students to be an active part of the community.
Yeah, I'm just going to sort of build on both points from Liv and James. So obviously the presence is amazing in Lenten. The idea of presence from Students Union. It was actually discussed in my first year when I was president at Broadgate Park. I remember talking to Jamie Dickinson, who was currently the Living Out sort of, coordinator. So he organised, he looked after the off-campus hall, so Broadgate Park, Riley Park, St. Peter's Court, Riverside Point. He's now the deputy warden of Riley Park, St. Peter's Court, Riverside. He was saying that the SU had actually done quite a lot of research into looking to acquire a property on Lenten Boulevard, sort of in the centre of Lenten, to provide a presence for the community, not just for students, he was saying, not just for students, but also for members of the community. We do have families living in Lenten. It is a key problem. And I'm just going to link it back to the police point. Very sorry for obviously going back there, but I think it is very important. We all know it is a big issue that, you know, we've been trying to tackle for a few years now, and it is increasing crime. But if people remember back to last year, so I'm a third year like you, Hermione. I lived in Lenten for the past 2 years. If anyone remembers back to last year when the community protection office were really hot on house parties, really hot. Like, honestly, yeah. The minute a peeper sound came out of a house and you saw a group of people heading towards it, the police were on it. And I think that really illustrates the point which I made earlier. So 7 to 11, you see a lot of community protection officers roaming down Derby Road, handing out fines. We have been campaigning, but Saturday night I was lucky to get a few hours sleep. I was amazed at the amount of house parties there were this weekend. I don't know if anyone else heard them.
There were a lot.
And do you know what? It just illustrates the lack of police when we really need them most, because last year, do you know what? Crime is increasing, and, you know, house parties are being shut down within minutes. But now, you know, they're not being shut down at all. And I think that just illustrates it. And it's something you can go to the police, because the police, it's quite clearly, you know, something they don't want, but they're not even enforcing that anymore. So I think that's a very important point to raise. Obviously taking evidence as well, case studies, and the crime is increasing, just forcing the police's hand and the councils.
Yeah, Liv? Can I jump in? Like, I think I completely agree with what you're saying. Like, I see police walking around at like 3-4 in the afternoon, but I don't know where they are anymore. Like you said, like, now I think about it, there are so many parties all the time, and it just shows that if the police do want to make a difference, they can. Like, Prees were getting shut down, and it wasn't even a party last year. So I think if we were to communicate with them, like, we just need to build the relationship with the police. And once we communicate with them, build that relationship, then we can increase safety in Lenten. As I said, it's pure communication, because they can make a difference if they want to. And if we talk to them about it, show where we're coming from, surely they'll understand and we can make Lenten safer.
Meg, you don't like necessarily mention the safety of Lenten in your manifesto. Do you have any comments about how you would address this as an issue? Because as we've heard, it clearly is a big problem. So how would you tackle that, even though it's not necessarily a manifesto point?
Yeah, so obviously it is such a massive issue. The burglaries and break-ins and sexual assaults and actual assaults that happen in Lenten are daily, if like all the time on buy sell, you see it like constantly. And I completely agree with all three other candidates. Like, they have all raised amazing points about communicating with the police, ensuring that the support is there, making conversations. And I think communication is definitely the first step, just being showing the police, going to the police with the statistics, with the case studies, like Liv said, and being like, this is the impact that is being had on our student community daily, and just making them aware of the situation, but they can't be blind to it anyway.
Just a point there, Meg, you mentioned buy sell. Do you think any of you think there's some value in using that as a tool for safety in Lenten?
Yeah, so I know that there's been a lot of groups set up. Like, there's one about girls walking home, like, not safe space, where you can post in it, like, oh, I've just seen X happening on this road, like, please be aware of it. I've just had a burglary on this road, like, please be aware of it. And it's got, like, numbers of people, Nightline, Night Owls, and people you can call if you are find yourself in a situation where you have to walk home alone at night, which I think is absolutely brilliant. It really gets the message out there very quickly to a lot of people. So I do think platforms like that are good. I think social media is an amazing platform. Like, it is one of the main means of communication today, and I really do think that by posting stuff on there, then it reaches a lot of people.
So I actually disagree with the use of buy sell for I guess in general awareness. So we do get a lot of posts of, oh, there's a strange man sort of lurking in people's gardens. I don't know about you, but with regards to notifications, I get notifications here and there, really, regarding things. So sometimes I'll get a notification and it's actually an hour late. So it's like, oh, there's a strange man in down Rothsay Avenue, and it'll be an hour late and I've just seen it. I do disagree with it. I actually saw Jacob comment on something last week, which is, you know, it's all well and good posting on buy and sell, but the police are the only ones that can really deal with it. So making the police aware, first of all, I think students are just rushed to buy and sell, like, straight away to sort of report what's happening, but it's the police you want to go to first, essentially, in order to sort of, if there is something dodgy happening, you know, you just report it. If there's 111, the non-emergency number, it might just be a shady looking guy, but I do disagree with it. And if it's a situation where we are sitting down with the police, which, as I've said, has obviously happened before, I don't think buy and sell is the way to go about it. Obviously, you can create some amazing petitions using it, and certainly to get a petition out there for people to sign, it's an amazing platform to share things. But I think it should be student union led, and it should be the student union sort of representing the students of Lenton rather than individuals on that buy sell page. Make it an official sort of process.
We'll agree to disagree about that, but I do agree with the point you said about 111. Like, I definitely don't think there's enough publicity surrounding that. Like, I don't think people actually, it comes to people's, the forefront of people's minds. Like, I think there needs to be a lot more promotion by the university and basically saying, like, don't be afraid to call the police. Like, I think with everything that happened last year, with the shutdown of parties, shutdown of priests, things like that, like, people were kind of like, oh, the community first responders don't do anything, things like that. But a lot of the time, it's PCSOs who are strutting around London. It's not actual police officers. These people are, like, they're usually retired police officers. They get paid a lot less. That's what they're out there for. They're for the community. So, like, actual police officers, not that I'm saying PCOs aren't actual, but you know what I mean. They're not walking around London a lot of the time. So people need to, like, disassociate the PCSOs with the police officers and be thinking, right, instead of doing this, I do need to phone the police first. So I do agree with Lewis in some respect, but I also do think buy, sell and means like that are a good way of communication.
Do you think, kind of, Lewis, you said that people, like, probably shouldn't be using buy and sell and should be calling 111, but I mean, from the number of posts you see on buy and sell, do you not think that the police would just be inundated and they wouldn't be able to answer all the calls, and then you kind of get to the point where people in Lenton don't think that the police or the council care about them?
I personally think that last point you made I personally think that people do think that the police don't care about us. I think that's the sort of spirit and the feeling of students, certainly in Lenton, as that's kind of the hot spot of this conversation right now. As I've said, we don't see them after 11 o'clock. You made the point, Meg, of disassociating PCOs from actual police officers. But even if you've got someone walking down Derby Road that is a PCO after 11 o'clock, right, it might not be a police officer as such, but it is a deterrent of crime. And I'm not saying don't use buy and sell. I think it's an amazing sort of platform to raise awareness of the problem. I use it in my campaign video. It's hard to go a week without seeing something on buy and sell. And it's very true. It's amazing to raise awareness is where I'm going with it. But at the end of the day, for preventing crime, it's not the right way to go about it. And for actually doing something about it, rather than posting it up and then it getting drowned over literally hours. Oh, I've got a crisis ticket, I'm saying it gets drowned. you know, it's there for a day, it's there for 2 days. It gets lost.
Sorry, cut you off there. I think that is all we have time for on that topic, but do any of you have, like, a closing statement you'd like to give about the topic of Lenten safety in general?
I'd say, like, if you do... I completely agree with what you guys are saying. Like, if you do have a problem, like, buy and sell is the typical go-to, but if it... You should probably be calling 111 just in case, like, because then police are more likely to kind of go out and just patrol. Like, if you are in fear of safety, I'd definitely do that.
Welcome back to your question time with your president candidates for the SU elections. We were just talking about safety in Lenten and what our candidates feel about that. And we're now going to be moving on to, which I think is the other really massive topic, especially in this elections I found, which is the issue of kind of welfare on campus, mental health services, etc. So a lot of you talk about, obviously, increasing funding for welfare services, etc. Liv, you talk about wanting to increase funding, but where do you plan on bringing this funding from? We know from personal experience here at URN that funding is really lacking within the SU and is just being cut on the daily basis, really. So how do you plan on making it a priority for the SU and making sure the funding is directed at welfare services?
I think in terms of making it a priority, I think it's becoming, again, like Lenten, an increasing issue in all years at university, and I think the university itself, that as well as the students' union, are becoming increasingly aware of this issue. So, as you said, in the elections as well, because pretty much every candidate is mentioning welfare, regardless of what role they're going for, it is a very obvious issue that needs to be tackled. In terms of kind of shifting funding towards the services, the welfare services, again, it's a matter of communication and building relationships. I know there have been talks previously, and the counselling service in particular is very underfunded. And for that, as I said, it's just building relationships, sitting down, talking to the welfare services, to the university itself and the students' union, and explaining the issue and what is happening.
Lewis, you also talk about kind of moving this funding towards welfare services. Do you have similar kind of aims to Liv, or like methods in doing this?
I think my methods are very different from everyone else's, from what I can see. So basically, it's been an issue, as Liv just said, through every single year I've been at university. It's kind of been known as there's this buzzword, which a lot of candidates run on with their manifestos, but how can it not? It's on the increase, and it's really, you know, really bad here, unfortunately. It's quite clear that the welfare services are not getting the funding they need. And once again, like the Lenten safety, I'm not going to pretend that the talks haven't happened and that it hasn't been tried to done by the various officers in the past and the current officers now. So I look at it very differently. I think, right, so there's no funding available. As you said, SU are cutting left, right and centre, cutting budgets left, right and centre. So there's no funding available. So the Students' Union works under a preferred supply scheme. So you have Crisis, which is a preferred supply. You've got Ocean, which is a preferred supply of your clubbing nights. You've got Red Oak Roller, who provides amazing stash as a preferred supplier of the Students' Union. Why can't the Students' Union adopt that policy with regards to welfare? So I haven't actually experienced the welfare services myself. There are people close to me who have gone and they've been faced with incredible waiting times. But they are being failed with being signposted elsewhere. There are other options available in town, in Surrey City. I'm an Essex boy, so town is just going downtown. Yeah, there is other options available in the city, which I do know of from people close to me. So why don't the Students' Union sit down with these other options who do have the funding available, and maybe they have, you know, I always forget the words, you know, shorter waiting times. Why don't they sit down with these companies and work out a deal where it's affordable for students and money comes the student union's way? As you said, they're cutting budgets left, right and centre. Crisis gives money to the Students' Union to be the preferred clubbing night. Ocean gives money to the Students' Union to be the preferred clubbing night. Red Oak Roller gives money to the Students' Union to be the preferred garment personalisation provider. Why can't we have a charity in town help us cut down the waiting list and provide a different option for students?
Do you know if there are any feasible places in town that would be up for doing this, I suppose?
So I don't know the names of them, unfortunately. It's kind of a thing that I'd like to sit down, if I do get the role, sit down with the welfare officer and certainly the staff involved in the Students' Union and talk about. You can't just draft up a contract overnight. I know that that's not simple. But I also know that welfare issues have been on the rise, and they've been an issue for as long as I've been here at university. So it's not like it's going to go away anytime soon. And, you know, but I do know that University of Trent do have sort of like a welfare counselling service, which is actually separate, I believe, from the university, but Trent students do go and study there as well. But as I said, I don't know perfectly well. I haven't had that much experience with welfare issues myself, but the people around me have. I just know that there are quite a few options available in town, and I know, certainly working for Red Oak Roller in the past and a current preferred supplier, I know kind of how the contracts work and how sort of the money comes the SU's way and what the services you get in return are.
Meg, you don't necessarily talk about providing funding for other welfare services, but what do you think about that as kind of a way of tackling welfare issues?
Obviously, the absolute dream situation would be for the SU to be able to inject as much money as possible into the welfare services, but that is just feasibly, unfortunately, not going to be able to happen. The SU are making cuts everywhere. Like you, I'm involved in an SRS, so we are completely self-funded. The SU don't have that much money to inject into things, and I just think that... I think that Lewis's preferred supplier idea is quite a good idea. I think like moving the workload onto something else would be better. I know I don't completely mention it in my manifesto, but welfare has been is one of my main points. I have said in my previous media day interviews that I want to put that at the forefront of change. But unfortunately, there's only so much we can do at the moment with the funding that we have.
We've actually just had a message in about this, kind of directed at you, Lewis. Waiting times for counselling and welfare services are long across the country. How can you make the change within Nottingham? And also, I think from having friends and people close to me who have used the welfare services here, often the issue isn't the waiting time. It's actually, for example, counsellors not turning up, or people not actually knowing who their welfare officer is for their school. So do you think maybe we should be tackling that, which is something that we can change, rather than looking at waiting times, which is a countrywide issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just kind of hoping to add something to the points I was making. I'm not suggesting this is a long-term solution. I'm suggesting this is a short-term solution. As Meg said, the funding is not going to appear out of thin air, unfortunately. It's not a short-term fix. It is simply something to ease the load off of, I believe, quoted as the eight. As I said, I haven't had the experience with the welfare sort of systems here myself, but I believe it's eight welfare counsellors I hear. Just easing the workload, spreading it. Maybe you prefer supplier, you approved supplier, that's completely the wrong wording, I do apologise, with maybe two different counselling services in the city. The Students' Union, it's completely up to them who they choose. It's completely up to them whether they have one or two. With the events process, you had Student Clubber and Portland Student Events doing the exact same thing, but still the same amount of money came from both companies into the Students' Union. I do think that I don't know, as a film and television studies student, I don't know who my welfare rep is for my school. I have heard that a lot of schools don't have welfare reps because there's a shortage of them, because it is a countrywide problem. What I do know is that the Students' Union can't handle it, and the only answer in the short term is to look elsewhere, because, as I've said, it's not going to just fix itself.
Liv?
Building on your point, Lewis, in my manifesto, what I want to do, which I mentioned on my media day, is to train the rep on the JCRs, who would be the welfare rep, give them quite in-depth, lengthy training that will ensure that they are able to deal with students' problems. I think in first year, because halls are your first point of call, you may not know who your welfare rep is. I certainly didn't. When I was in first year, kind of floating around a bit lost. So halls would be the ideal way, I think. So I'd, if elected, I'd hope to train the welfare rep and ensure that they've got the training in place that they can help students. I'd want to implement a kind of monthly way where they would create, students could kind of email in questions about like what welfare service is available to me, where can I get this, where can I get that, and then accordingly the welfare rep would then create kind of a response, maybe a response video, a response document, and post on the hall page. And that way students who may be too scared to go up to the welfare rep or talk to someone about how they're feeling, maybe because they just don't want to, can then access the data that they need in an anonymous way. And that way it would ease the waiting list, potentially. Well, maybe not ease the waiting list, but it would at least help students who are struggling and signpost them to the right places to go, and just provide an extra like port of call and support, particularly for freshers or first years who are struggling. And then accordingly, if it was second and third years, we can then provide the same welfare training for the committees of society, sports teams. I know that you do need a welfare rep trained already, but we can just build on it and then do the same thing. And then students who are part of second and third year can then access that data as well, and it might provide some extra support for them.
But I suppose, what kind of data are you talking about here?
Oh, I mean, like, kind of, so for example, I wanted to create like an anonymous Google document where students can maybe put in like, where can I find help for this, or I'm struggling in this aspect of my life, or kind of small questions they might need to ask, post it onto the document. The welfare rep would read through it, and that can be their kind of monthly thing to do, because I remember on my JCR, like, the welfare reps, like, they didn't really have a full functioning role. They did welfare events and that sort of thing, but they weren't fully trained. So in that respect, we could do that, and then they create like a response video or response document, post it on the hall page, answering those questions that students had, and then students who maybe didn't email in can also access that support.
Lewis?
Yeah, I just want to agree and kind of question Liv's point. So, yeah, as President Broadgate Park in first year, I do agree that the training just across the board was pretty poor, certainly when it came to welfare. So my welfare rep actually changed hands halfway through the year because they just didn't really know what to do. They didn't...
I mean, in my halls, the male welfare dropped out with a
yeah exactly. They're kind of so this is me agreeing with Liv, like, they're not given the right tools to right training to really help as efficiently as they can to perform the role as well as they can, as to the best of its ability. There's not a set purpose to it. It's a title essentially, and they help out here and there, and they're supposed to help out on like wellbeing weeks and stuff, which is really good. But 1 week in the entire year, people at university, they're away from home. But my question would be to Liv, is kind of like, I agree with basic training, but basic training can only go so far. I think it's important that it's an invaluable sort of thing to have some basic welfare training. But how would you differentiate the students? So, just quickly, sorry, this is getting a bit jumbled up, but in Welcome Week we do the mentor log and the welfare log, for example, where it doesn't matter whether you're a student or a mentor, you can submit kind of, I'm worried about this person, this happened. I do agree with that, that's really good, but how would you differentiate what should be dealt with by the welfare rep, and who would sort of have eyes into this document? Because obviously there's a lot of information about data protection and stuff like that. People, or you said anonymous, but it's still people's sort of things. Like, where, how would you sort of sort through who needs further help, and how would that be decided essentially?
Yeah, fair. I think with that, we'd have to work very closely with the Equal Opportunities and Welfare Rep, who would be elected next year, in terms of providing training to the JCR and society committee members. And also, I think during that training, what would occur is they would go through, very similar to the Welcome Week training that we all received, going through and kind of differentiating between what is, can be dealt with by the welfare rep and what needs to be signposted kind of upwards to the welfare officer. Yeah.
James, I was just going to ask you, you don't necessarily explicitly mention welfare in your manifesto. You do talk about kind of reconstructing the minority network. So what are your views on welfare and how to tackle this issue?
So this, which again is similar to the previous issue that we had when we were talking about safety in Lenton, is something that I think is part on president manifestos but shouldn't be on there. So I feel like the president role is important to develop the union to enable the other officers to do what they can. Like, the community officer should be addressing the crime in Lenton. The equal ops and welfare officer is there to be a specialist to address mental health and other welfare issues. And I think the president role should be there to develop the union to allow that, rather than having themselves specific policies to go into Lenton and tread on the community officer's toes and
do you not think that the president should be leading the example?
No, I don't. I feel like the president should be developing the union, and I think they're distinct things. Having specialists in each officer position is essential for that.
I completely understand where you're coming from, and I understand there's things that are under the mandate of president, but I also think that the president should work closely with every single officer and help them achieve their role as much as possible. The president, you... I think, James, you perceive the president to... and you think the uni perceive the president to be kind of like a figurehead, like a hierarchy kind of system, but I've never seen a president like that. As I said in my Hustings last night, I think that in my first year, Ismail, like, he worked so well with the other officers. Alan worked well with the officers. I know Pete, unfortunately, had to resign, but when they were here, they worked so well with the other officers. And I don't really agree with your idea that the other officers, that you shouldn't put the welfare of the students, the community of Lenton on your manifesto just because it doesn't directly come under the mandate of president. I think you should look after all your students.
I think there's a difference between saying, like, president should be working with other officers and that they, like, what I'm saying. So I'm saying is that the president should be developing the union to enable those other officers to do what they can. It's not simply an officer position with a number of items selected from other manifestos or other officer manifesto mandates that they can work on. So I'm not denying that the presidents in the past have worked with the other officers. They have, and they've great. But that's not what I think the president role should be focusing on, which means we get change in the moment for a year, and then we get a new president who focuses on different things, we get change in the moment, rather than a development of the union long term.
So why then have you put about paying the staff the living wage on your manifesto when that sometimes comes under the mandate of president but is also linked to the community officer?
So I think the paying the staff the living wage falls under the first directive of the union, which is to represent its members. And not paying staff the living wage is directly exploiting its members. I think if, say it did happen, we abolished the president, we had a union development role, that is exactly a thing that would fall under the union development mandate.
But, sorry.
I'm just going to butt in here. I actually agree with the, as I said last night at the hustings, I do think the president title needs to be changed. I do agree with the development sort of role. And I understand the student union, and I'm sure you do, Meg, too. You do find a lot of roadblocks pretty much every single way you turn. So as President Borgate, as sorry it is the experience I have, I've got to keep going back to it. I found that I had to go through multiple layers of staff to kind of get to spend that money which I was entrusted to spend. I had to go through multiple layers of staff to get this change that I wanted at Borgate, even though it was a private hall where I could have just gone to Borgate Park, but for some reason I had to talk to the Students' Union as well. But it all kind of came to the same person, which kind of made all the decisions, even though he was in a completely different role. I understand there's roadblocks in every way, and I do understand the development sort of aspect of your argument. So enabling sort of clear paths to achieving these things, which is so important, I do believe. But I also, I'm a team worker. Sorry, I've lost my ability to talk. Yeah, and I believe that working hard with people certainly to achieve what I want to achieve, and I think that welfare and safety in Lenton, as well as the other points I make, are very important. And I think the only way you can do that is working together with every single person. So whilst president, I believe, should be changed, I do think that there's both sides of the coin, and that's the only way that I can see the president role working to the best of its ability. If you say it's going to develop, we're just going to develop it, then you're kind of saying, right, we're turning our back on achieving these things. I do understand the individuals can achieve it, but I think the best way to achieve it to the best extent is working together, and that's kind of what I stand for. But no, I do agree with a lot of your points, certainly with the roadblocks in the university, in the student union, sorry.
Yeah, I feel like it's really easy to mischaracterize what I'm saying as not working in a team and stuff. And I feel like this is exactly what I want to push forward, is that what yourself and Meg have like suggested and talked about is that, yeah, we should have this president who develops the union and works on all these other issues. And then the manifestos that are being put forward are a selection of issues from just other officer manifestos, nothing specific about developing the union, which I think should be the focus of the role. The role with that focus can then work with other officers to enable them. That's exactly what it should be doing. But it's not simply a role that works in a team, but how it does that is it has have a mandate on issues from across the board.
Liv, did you have a point earlier about what you wanted to say?
It was covered.
Okay. Lewis?
I think I might have just forgotten it. If you give me a second. Yeah, come back to me.
Sorry.
James?
Yeah, and just to tag on to what I was saying, working with the current officer team, I know that this is something that a lot of them want, and we've been to other unions visiting how they work, and this is the kind of thing that they say helps. It helps to have changed the president into a new role with a specific focus, because it won't just pick and choose little manifesto buzzwords, as you said earlier, with welfare for their manifestos.
Liv?
You said earlier about how you think the role of president obviously needs adapting, but that you say that they come in for a year, they do a bit of change, then they kind of wander off and then it gets refilled. Do you not think that it'd be better to then kind of find president but hire somebody who is going to be full-time and last not just for a year but is a full-time member of staff for a long prolonged period of time, like any member of the student staff, like the staff in the union? Would that not be better?
Do you mean like the CEO?
No, just kind of like someone who's going to be hired and isn't just for a year, who's going to stay for a long time, not just a student who comes in.
I feel
graduated.
Like that's a benefit from having officers who rerun and run for multiple years in the role, but I'm not sure it would characterise the political student activism of students' union.
If you hired someone who was this development officer, they would be able to have these roles for, they'd have goals that were lasting longer than a year, and they'd be able to actually develop the union.
But the point of the union is that it's member-led for its members. We can't have a non-member of the union, so a non-student, deciding the direction of the union. That's the most important thing, that it's a student developing the union.
I think, yeah, that last point you ended on, a student leading the union, is so, so important. There's a reason why students are elected to be in these roles, and that's simply because of the student experience. You can't replicate it in other areas. So the point which I forgot was, I've been trying to hold on to it as you guys are talking. Just a little bit of a defence, certainly to my manifesto and the candidate sitting next to me. You come from a very different sort of experience background to us. You've obviously had the part-time role. So that obviously gives you invaluable insights into how the student union work that we do not have. We might have in certain areas we do. So my kind of idea of the manifesto that I have produced is essentially the development role that you're proposing does come part and parcel, but it's something that I have to pick up when I'm there, because I haven't had that experience. I don't know quite exactly when he's developing, to what extent things need developing, and essentially what most importantly needs to be developed first. So that's kind of just a defense to us. So I'm just suggesting it comes part and parcel, and we'll kind of get there. It's just we have to put forward these points, essentially.
James, do you want to just quickly finish off your point, and then we'll go to a song, and then we can come back in?
I feel like that underlines what I talk about in my manifesto about the role being undemocratic in its current form. I feel like the role needs to be about development, and that at the moment people are running for it without the experience to develop the union. It's not targeted. So people who would be better doing welfare are running for president because they don't want to do welfare and a couple other things, rather than having the insight and knowledge to develop the union, which is some of the insight and knowledge that I have and I've brought through. And I think that for that role to be effective and democratic, the manifestos people put forward should be about the development, because that's what people then vote on.
We're going to jump straight back into the kind of question of the Students' Union reform. I mean, James, you obviously want to reform the entire president role, which, as we heard before, people have quite a few opinions on. But what I wanted to talk about now was, James, you put in your manifesto about funding and making the international position a full-time position. So how do you plan on, number one, having the funding to be able to pay them? And also, how will you go about making the reform to make that happen? Because I think may kind of require a formal amendment to the union constitution in order to bring in another full-time role and the backing of the union itself. So that would require a vote. So how do you plan to do that?
Well, this is the kind of area where I know where I'm doing. Okay, we'll do funding first. The priorities of the union's funding, are complex, obviously. I think the first priority of that is paying your staff the living wage. As I've said, the union shouldn't be exploiting its members. If you would pay your staff an unfair wage, you're exploiting them. There's no line to move on that. With the international officer, it's something that's already been looked at. We were looking into it last year, and earlier this year, Jess was looking into it. And it's something that is feasible. We know that I'm not going to pretend to have access to the union's finances, even I don't have that info, but it is something that was being planned to be done. So,
but do you think that that is where the funding should be going?
Yes, so a fifth of our students are international students, and they're currently represented by one volunteer who can't work more than 20 hours a week. I think that speaks for itself. Paying one person to do that, even that, when I say it like that, paying one person to do that doesn't seem like enough. So they definitely need representation on the full-time officer committee, no less than, say, postgraduates like myself, and there's a full-time postgraduate officer.
Do you guys have any opinions about introducing international officer as a full-time role?
Hit the table. Like you said, there's quite a large proportion of international students, especially on campuses such as Jubilee. Bringing an international officer as a full-time role would be very difficult financially, as we've just touched on. But also, I know you had a question last night in question time about the fact that they can't work more than X amount of time a week, about changing the visas, and then going on to the horrible matter of Brexit and working out how the visas would work from then on, because obviously it does have to be an international student representing these students.
Can I jump straight in there? Just since last night, I've found out, which should have been obvious to me at the time, that there's laws that sort out for sabbatical officers. So Cassie Yolwick is an international student. Demetrius Running for Education is an international student. The law just extends it. I think it actually extends it as a student visa rather than a work visa, but it's all legislatively there for that to happen.
Kind of moving on from just talking about the international officer, James, you talk about wanting to reform the Union Council to make it more democratic. How do you actually plan on going about doing that?
Yeah, so at the moment, the Union Council, well, specifically the ideas panel of the Union Council, is made up of 20-odd randomly selected students, kind of like jury duty. They're paid for their time. They get an hour or so of training. They then vote on the union's policies. Now, having sat through many union councils, policies that the officers put forward that they're mandated to do on, from their manifesto and stuff, fail. Because the union council panel asks questions that don't need to be asked. They ask questions about what the university will do regarding certain things or how will they fix certain things, which just wouldn't happen if the members of union council were fixed and trained. So obviously, what I talk about on there is that we would go into review of it. So I have ideas now that I can share, but obviously, as this is changing the highest policy setting body of the union, it would have to go through extensive review. Now, some of that involves changing how council works to make sure the people on it are far better informed than they are, because random students selected new at each council doesn't do the job. For the Democratic Procedures Committee at the moment, which is another wing of Union Council that I sit on, the people are elected on a mandate for the entire year to sit on DPC, and that means the changes which is how we change the bylaws, which is how we'd add an international officer, those kind of changes need, some form of expertise, which means you sit on that for the year, you get a lot more training, you get a lot more in-depth. And I think taking the ideas panel of council in that direction is a good one.
Lewis?
Just a kind of question about that. Do you not think that the questions of those that are not sort of fully informed or trained represent the university as a whole? So it's students as a whole. So, for example, but there's not really an example. So yeah, you've got someone on this, they're randomly selected, given an hour worth of training, they're paid, as you said. Do you not think that if you sit them down and fix them for a year, for example, and give them a full set of training, they're going to have very different ideas and an informed idea that might actually be very different from student body as a whole?
Well, yes, they'll have a more informed idea about what they need to bring up on council. But to give an example, Cassie O'Boyle brought the biometrics policy to Union Council in the last semester, which is currently under referendum in this election as well. And some of the questions Cassie received was about what she's going to do to put things in place for the university monitoring attendance, rather than about whether or not we oppose biometrics. So it's just that kind of training about what... It's not about changing their opinion or immersing them in the students' union, which I would love every student to be, but it's about allowing them to be informed to ask the right sort of questions, and that random questions or a lack of understanding of ideas doesn't sink policy, which has been voted for on manifestos in this election period, which is the highest turnout democratically we have in the entire year.
Just kind of moving it back to manifestos. Sorry, James, to go back to you again. But this is kind of linking to the getting rid of the president role and kind of saying that you said before that president manifestos shouldn't have things to do with community and stuff like that on. So you said in your manifesto that you didn't think that president should kind of make these like crowd-pleasing remarks almost. But then you said that you wanted to rename the teaching and learning building to the Bertie building.
Yes.
Do you not think that that's a crowd-pleaser?
That's exactly what that was. That was an "and finally" in the kind of news way of an ad. That's why it literally says "and finally." I think it'd be cool. But it's not one of the 9 core manifesto points which I've got on there. I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be nice to do. Send a few emails. But that's not the core of my manifesto. I've not got like 3 or 4 manifesto points which are all crowd-pleasing buzzwords. It's a little tacked-on thing at the end.
However, it is still on your manifesto. Yeah. I can't say that I've sat down and read every single candidate's manifestos. I haven't. I've read all 3 of yours. but you're welcome. Enjoyed it. Lovely. But we don't have crowd-pleasing points on our manifestos. Do you not think that it makes a bit of a joke, really, of the manifesto process, the elections process, of putting that on there when you're a crowd pleaser and then saying, "Oh, I want to do this, and this," but also, "Haha, I want to rename the Bertie building." I just think that it's not. I think it just undermines it a bit.
Can I add to that question? So, what I believe a manifesto to be is something you're writing down and putting out there of what you promise, or at least intend to do. And students essentially could pick any one of my 6 manifesto points, for example, and hold me accountable for each one of them. So, for example, you might have students there, which it is a crowd pleaser, as you said, which vote for you based on that. And we all know the university is not going to agree to, well, they might, who knows, they might. But I imagine it's going to be pretty unlikely. Do you not think that for the students that are voting for you based off that and you're not able to deliver, do you just think that, as Meg said, is a bit of a joke?
Well, I think if you read the manifesto, immediately after I say that, I say, or like rename the like little bit he lived, the Bertie atrium, which I think I'm confident would be done. Like, I'm sure Hallwood would be fine with that. I think Hallwood's first name was Bertie. I think that's why the cat's named that. I'm not sure on that, but I think that would be fine. So like, I feel like I would carry that out as much as anything else, but it is tagged on the end as a kind of light remark after.
But do you not think that
points.
That if, as Lewis said, that's what people are voting for you based on, almost? Because I mean, a lot of people have said like, "Oh, James Feasey, he wants to rename the teaching learning building the Bertie building," and do you not think that kind of, once you've done that, like, will that be the biggest focus for you? Because that's what people have voted for you. And it's almost like if you get voted in and then you don't achieve that, people are like, Oh.
Yes, and I think I would be as accountable as anybody else to their manifesto points.
Completely, but it's more the whole... I feel like people relate to that point, almost, and in the other president, the candidate's manifesto is talking about community and stuff like that. Yes. People relate to that point.
Yes, and I, again, just going back to the issue I said before, I've got 9 tangible plans to develop the union as a whole, and one thing that I think doesn't fall under anyone else's remit would be kind of cool. I think it'd be good. I'd like it. That I would intend to do fully. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to point out that obviously you've got a very strong manifesto. I do agree with quite a lot of the points on there. It's just pointing out that one bit, essentially. I just wanted to clear that up.
Obviously, Jacob Collier has recently got back the spicy meatball panini. And that, I'm pretty sure, is all anyone is aware that he's actually achieved this year. So, obviously, he is the community officer. So, I'm not just attacking you here, James, with the Bertie point. But for all of you, how would you make sure, I think, that people were aware of what you achieved, and kind of, even if it's the boring stuff, making people still invested and interested in it?
I one of my manifesto points is engagement. Unfortunately, just student engagement with the students union is very, very poor in my opinion. So we were all celebrating 2,000 votes yesterday, which is what, 5%, 6%? That's 5% of every single, you know, of the whole student body. It's obviously great that it's on the rise, as we said. It's much higher than it normally is at this point. But I just think it starts at the very roots of it, of getting people engaged with the Students' Union. People don't know what it is. They don't know what the officers do. They don't know all these different things available for them, even, you know, signposting people to different things. They don't know it's available. And I think it all begins there. And your question was kind of like, how do you want to do this? So for me, one of the theories I came up with is a majority of students, when they come to university, they go through halls of accommodation. And you go through a registration process, which is managed by the Students' Union. Why can't you add something there? What are you interested in? A few drop-down boxes. Football. I'm interested. I want to play football at uni. Are you interested in knitting? Are you interested in coffee? I don't know. All these wonderful societies we have. That's where engagement with the Students' Union really starts. And through that, using that information, through just signing up, what you have to do to come to university, find somewhere to live, maybe you commute. There's other things which I'd like to look into to offer that to living out students as well, because they obviously don't go through the same procedures as hall accommodation. But just targeting that marketing, it starts at the very first step you take into uni, even before. You want to be engaged with this union, and it's failing.
Liv, going on from that point, you said in your manifesto about a greater point, like more points within the year, that there'll be engagement between the students and the student union. What do you mean by that?
So for that one, that's for more like kind of getting the students' voice out there, less so to do with officers. But for your point, Lewis, I really agree that it should start the beginning. I think maybe even sending out, like, as silly as it sounds, like just an email at the beginning of the year or kind of in August before the first years arrive, being like, this is what your student union does, this is what it is. Because I know when I came to university, I had no idea that I needed to buy tickets through the student union website.
But do you think, I mean, I know from, I mean, being a third year now, do students check their emails, especially in first year? Do you think that's the most useful way of doing it and the biggest tool?
Yeah, I think before they come, they're more likely to check, kind of keeping up with updates, particularly in the summer just before. I think during the year it can be problematic because students are inundated with emails, and it is a struggle to keep up with them.
Going all the way back to our point earlier about social media platforms and things like that, when we were during Welcome Week, we utilised the hall's Facebook groups massively to be like, this is happening, this is where it's happening, this is when it's happening, these mentors are coming, introducing ourselves, being like, this activity is going on if you're interested in this. I know more students at Broadgate were involved in it, weren't they? And all the mentors. So putting things on there, like going back to my point of me promoting social media, saying how good it is, things like that. So I definitely think even if students don't check their emails, Facebook, things like that are an accessible platform.
yeah, I think certainly marketing is something that the Students' Union is failing at. Social media, emails, letters, they're all tricky. How do you target students? How are you going to get them to read what it is you're trying to get out there? It's certainly an issue in my role with the preferred supplier I'm with now. How do we target students? Because that is our target group. We're trying to target them. How do we do it? Do we do it through Facebook, social media platforms? Instagram has been massively on the rise. There's massive engagement with Instagram now. How do you do it? And I think it just starts very simply with, I know we've taken this in the very wrong direction, you are saying about how offices are more visible, but it starts with just basic marketing sort of skills. I think committees need to be taught how to market things. It's an invaluable skill to use in further life. A lot of businesses employ it. It's almost like you're gaining something. You do gain a lot from the Students' Union, but you're gaining something extra which you're not necessarily signed up for, but it's part of the package. And you now know, I don't know, you might know, you look at the insights. This is the engagement figures we had with Instagram last year. This is the engagement figures we had with Facebook. Emails were ignored. I think it starts with marketing and learning how do you really get the student to read what it is you're trying to get out there.
I'm just going to move on a bit from that point. Lewis, I think with your manifesto, a lot of people are talking about this transparency within the SU and seeing where your fees go, basically.
Yes.
So I have quite a few friends who study physics, and they were talking to me about this point and saying that for them it would really expose the physics department because they get a massive amount of money. And then coming from a history standpoint, and I do a language as well, I know there's hardly any students. There's loads of students. That's the problem. there's hardly any lecturers, so I study Mandarin. There's not enough teachers, so classes have to be combined. Different levels have to combine. However, my friend then said, who studies physics, that the amount that physics bring in as a department with Nobel Prize winners, I mean, does that kind of mean they deserve more money? So how would you address issues like that? Because if you release figures saying, well, English is the least kind of supplied department, obviously there's going to be outrage. But then...
Yeah, no, completely. Thank you very much for asking that question. I think that, unfortunately, when I was preparing my manifesto and certainly the way I've gone about it, it's something that needs quite a lot of clarity. So I'm hoping there's a lot of people listening to this right now. So essentially, I've been asked this question quite a lot. I've also been told that there is actually information available, and I was completely unaware of it. It's very hard to find, and it's very basic. So there is figures online which says 57% of your tuition fee goes to academic studies. But you can't break that 57% down any further. You understand, right, library costs, staffing costs. You understand things like buildings, because, yes, we needed the teaching and learning building. Film students like myself were in architecture for first and second year for our studies. We shouldn't be in architecture for film studies. What I'm proposing is not the reallocation of fees. I don't want that at all. I think, you know, the $9,000 we pay is vital. I think that I've certainly found my value in the Students' Union through everything I've done, and I've loved it, and I'd like to thank the Students' Union for allowing me to have the opportunity to run for Students' Union. What I'm suggesting is just having the ability to make an informed decision about coming to university. So I'm a film student. I have 6 contact hours a week currently. Yes, I am doing a dissertation, but my lecturers are in Hollywood. I can't contact them. If I do contact them by email, I will expect to get a reply a day later. I can't go and see anyone about it. And I'm kind of thinking, I'm not getting the same level of education as everyone else. And that itself is not fair. And I'm just saying to physics students and sciences, I know I've been giving out my leaflets around sciences, and you've been looking at the first point, transparency, and kind of looking at it like, no, don't want that. But don't you want high quality education for your peers? I think that's just the right we all deserve by choosing to come to university. Once again, I'm not wanting the reallocation of fees. I think we all pay £9,000 set. I'm just encouraging the university to step it up, give the level of education we expect in every single department, whether it's, you know, as you said, you in history, you're not exactly seeing your value for money. Sorry, languages.
Yeah, definitely not seeing much. No, I'm kidding.
yeah, languages. Yeah, it's just encouraging the university to be a bit more bolder in its approach to the way it takes film studies, for example, in international media and communications. IMC is huge. It's huge. But they're treated the same as film students. And, you know, as I said, I'm not... I hope I cleared that up, essentially.
James?
Yeah. Just kind of following from that, I'm a philosophy student, like master student, humanities, we don't get any money. But as you briefly mentioned, the university's finances are published in incredible depth on the finances page. It's a 50-page PDF explaining exactly where everything goes, grants and everything wise. You can also find contact hours on every school's websites and such. So what are you proposing?
I'm proposing that coming to university, students aren't equipped with the sort of knowledge that is needed to make that informed decision. So I had no idea. I've searched for it. I can't find it anywhere. So Cassie O'Boyle sent me a link to a very basic document which summarizes it. Does it, as you say, it probably goes into depth of that 57%. But who wants to sit there and read through 50 pages before coming to university? I'm suggesting make it clear, make it honest, make it easy for students.
Do you think it will deter
people
from coming to the university, though?
I think that's important. We all make an informed decision. Whether it's deterring students or not, as I said, I am lucky because I found my £9,000 worth in the Students' Union, and that links to engagement points. I want people to engage with the Students' Union more, to see that value for money, because there is money that comes this way from your tuition fee. What I am suggesting is just that informed decision. I don't think that potential students are equipped with the tools, as I said, to make that informed decision, and it is a highly contested point, obviously.
So what, in addition to the current information that's out there, would you put forward?
So essentially, a very summarized breakdown of sort of, right, this is your £9,000. If you're studying this subject, £3,000 of it goes towards the redevelopment of certain buildings, or it goes towards construction. Or it just breaks it down. Obviously, it's changing year on year. It's obviously going to be a huge job, and it's going to be something the university is not going to be happy with. As Hermione said, it's going to deter students, and the university will not want that. But I just think that it's impossible to make this informed decision. I feel cheated academically wise, and I felt like, yes, they are available, but I can't find them. You know, it takes a lot of digging to find them. From my experience, certainly, it's something that I've quite clearly struggled to find, because I put it on my manifesto and I did research into it, because it's obviously going through government at the minute. The Conservative government is debating it at the minute.
Megan, Liv, do you have any kind of points you want to make about this transparency issue?
So I study English as well as Liv, and last semester, when my dissertation was one of my modules, I was off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. And on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, I had literally, I think it was 4 contact hours. So, like Lewis, I've been massively involved in the SU. As the director of Carney, I need as much spare time as I possibly can have. So I have obviously found value there, like Lewis said, but I pay less as a Welsh student. The Welsh government subsidise our tuition fee, so it is still like means tested, so I only actually have to pay back 3.9 out of my tuition fees, which kind of makes me feel a bit better about it. But obviously my peers, like, I'd like to see where your money is going. I want to know where my £3,900 is going. So I definitely agree with Lewis's point of, like, this is going here, this is going here, this is going here.
Liv, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I study English too. I'm from London, so I do have to pay my full money. I'll be paying however much I owe back. So it would be nice to see where my money goes, because I have very low contact hours. But I think, Lewis, the one thing I was thinking when you were talking was you can't find the figures. But the same issue arises with promotion. Like, you can find them, you can publish them, but there's still going to be kind of the same complaint that people are going to have, saying, oh, I can't find them, I can't see them, just because the Students' Union isn't particularly great at marketing and stuff. So you might get the same issue arising.
It leads to various other issues. I've said quite a few times through my campaign that the Students' Union has got a lot of issues, unfortunately, which do need addressing. And that is quite simply the website. The website is a mess. Anshel raised it the other day in Hustings. There is, 10, 15 years worth of resources on there? it needs a real, you know, redevelopment in itself. Forget Portland. The website. Yeah, the website needs redeveloping, and it all starts there. Marketing, as you said, it's a huge job, but it's a step in the right direction, as we all agree, I think, to what my point is, my initial point, which is just being honest and transparent.
We're going to be moving over to the topic of bouncers and safety at nightclubs. I feel like this year this has become a massive issue. Pretty much every day on Buy and Sell, which we have talked about already, you see a post about a bouncer doing something or a video or just general abuse. Lewis and Meg, you both talk about this specifically in your manifestos. Meg, you kind of said you want to continue to look into the issue of bouncers. What do you mean by this? Because we know here at URN, so we're currently running an investigation into bouncers nightclubs. So we've been talking to Carpe Noctum, for example, and we were offered by them the chance to follow around a bouncer for an evening. But since then, they've never got back to us about it. I think this kind of just shows the lack of like communication, I suppose. So when you say you want to continue investigating this, what do you mean?
So firstly, the offer from Carpe Noctum of follow a bouncer around for a night is not going to show the real colours of a bouncer.
Oh no, of course, we were aware of this.
No, I completely know that, but it's just, it's just not going to...
That is another example of, if you follow a bouncer around for a night, he will be told in advance, don't do anything kind of thing. It is them covering their back, so it's almost like they're aware the issue's there, but they just don't really want to tackle it.
Yeah, they want to ignore it. Like, the owners of the clubs, they know it's happening. This isn't an advert for buy sell, which I think is kind of turning into, but you do see it regularly. I myself have had issues with bouncers where I haven't done anything wrong. I've seen friends have issues with bouncers when they've not done anything wrong. And it's across all our preferred supplier nights. It's not just Crisis. It is at Yo-Yo Thursdays. It is at Ocean. The bouncers often go between these clubs. They work... Most bouncers work at both places. They move around Nottingham. So it is often the same people with these problems. So by saying that I want to continue the work, Zoe has done amazing work this year by speaking to... by organising a form where you can... put in if you have a complaint about preferred supplier, which I don't think many people know about, because I mentioned it in my Impact interview on Media Day, and Alana from Impact, who was interviewing me, was like, I had absolutely no idea about this form. Like, why isn't it more out there? Zoe does comment on posts if she sees them, but with the constant stream coming in on Facebook, you can miss them sometimes. So I really want to promote that as much as possible so people know that that's happening.
I said yesterday all my manifesto points I see is quite equally important, and this is a massive issue, as you've illustrated, Hermione, and you as well, Meg. Personally, I do think advancements have been made in the area from Zoe, but I just don't think they're enough personally. As Meg said, the person conducting the Impact interview had no idea there was that form. What I find as well is that submitting this form, because of the Students' Union and the way it conducts their contracts, Crisis is a huge, huge night. It brings the Students' Union a lot of money, quite clearly, because something would have been done about this earlier, because it is common. So I think it begins right at the contract itself, and I've suggested in my manifesto, this form isn't enough. You know, the clubs don't do anything about it. I'm going to get a bit personal here. I got punched in the face last year, got a lovely black eye, got a nice little cut which is actually scarred in my eyebrow. Unfortunately, on radio you can't see, but if that cut had caught me like lower, I would have lost my eye, unfortunately. So I obviously on the night was covered in blood. I got kicked out. The bouncers didn't really do anything about it. The guy got away with it. I asked Andy Ho to look at the CCTV, of which he said he would, and never got back to me. So this issue for clubs is working in a bar. People that know me, Lace House.
Exactly.
these places, they don't want this stuff. They don't want the police to be involved, because it just highlights other issues such as licensing, things that are going wrong on the night. They don't want it highlighted because it brings in other issues. So I think it begins with the Students' Union to take responsibility with their affiliated nights. So that is Prism to an extent, with Rue Greg Richardson. That is, unfortunately, we don't have a Tuesday night. We've got Crisis, which is Carpe Noctem. We've got Thursday, which is Yo-Yo Pump on Thursdays. Ocean. And I believe an SU representative should be put in, not to stop things happening. You're not putting a representative in to be a bouncer. You're putting a representative in to deal with the incident as it happens. So what would you like to do? Would you like to contact the police here and now? Would you like to deal with it in another way? So student union procedures, through Welcome Week, we've got certain procedures that we follow. Would you prefer to give it a day to think about it? We'll come to you and we will follow it in the correct procedures. Whether you want to contact the police tomorrow, and we will follow up and get that CCTV, and we'll follow up and make sure that bouncer is punished for what has happened, because it's unacceptable. If someone's there to at least witness, even if they don't witness the incident themselves, they've seen a commotion, something's happened, they can work it out, they can investigate.
I think, kind of, Lewis, one point on that I'd like to make is, I mean, we don't actually have the time to have the conversation about this, but we have kind of covered this, is funding again.
Yep.
Obviously, these people will have to be paid to be there. I don't know if they'd have to be paid extra because they're working after hours, for example. That is an issue. But also, kind of, what are your opinions on Emma Hodges' kind of new plan about having these stamps at Crisis?
Stamps, yep.
Do we think that works? Do we think that is enough?
I'll try and keep it brief. As you said, we don't have the time to have the conversation. Funding we've already been into. I do think that the Students' Union, they choose to affiliate, approve these events. They choose, it's their active decision to approve students are going to go to Crisis. We're going to actively advertise Crisis. As a result, they take a responsibility, they take a duty of care of some form. So I do think that can even be installed is the wrong word, so please forgive me, as a volunteer process. We see the full-time officers, yes, they have so much on. I'm not suggesting that it's going to be the full-time officers. I'm suggesting that a volunteer from the Students' Union that's trained, maybe it's a team of people, they volunteer for a night to protect the students, because it's a duty of care that the Students' Union adopts. And I think that's the way you go about it. As for the stamp system, just very quickly, massive improvement. But like the Safer Taxi scheme, which, as I said, you ask one person and it exists, you ask another and it doesn't exist. Do bouncers follow this sort of policy, the procedure? Do they follow it? I haven't seen it in practice myself, but I think that's it's just putting a plaster over a wound, essentially. I think that it goes a lot further than just going out and putting your friend into a taxi. It goes further than that. It's a lot more.
Do any of the other candidates have any comments on Emma Hodges' plan or just bouncers in general in Nottingham?
I wanted to build on your point, Lewis. I think I like your idea that you could get a representative. I think it would be very difficult to do so, and you were talking about getting a group of people, so it kind of evoked ideas of the Nottingham Night Owls for me. I think I wouldn't know how you would obviously go about it, but if you were to get a group of students who were to kind of stand there and watch and be a representative of the Students' Union, but how would you get them to kind of like be a guard for the students? Like, you can't just get a group of Nottingham like students who could be first, second, third years to rival these kind of security guards. Sorry, they're very big, like they can be very daunting. Like, how would you?
And do you also think that the bodyguards / bouncers wouldn't take, for example, Night Owl seriously?
Yeah.
So just to reiterate, I'm saying SU representatives, not students. I don't think it's students' responsibility at all to be in charge of this representation. The Night Owls are amazing. They're incredible. They don't get the acknowledgement they deserve. I know a lot of Night Owls, and honestly, they are some of the most amazing people. You see a lot of them in Welcome Week, and I've got one of them managing my campaign, and honestly, just incredible. They're lovely people, and they don't deserve enough credit. So I'd like to give a shout out to the Night Owls. Same with Nightline, they're amazing. So yeah, just to reiterate, this is SU staff I'm talking about, volunteering a group of people from the Students' Union to go in and to, I'm not saying to rugby tackle bouncers if something goes wrong. I'm not saying to stand up to them at all. The bouncer is always going to have the last say. I'm very clear on that, working in a bar and various events in the past. the bouncer's word is final, but at least someone's there to witness that has happened, and it should be written into the contract that the students' union can investigate this, and the preferred supplier will actually do something about it and provide some sort of evidence.
I kind of want to move the conversation along here, kind of moving on more to talk about societies. So Meg, Olivia and Lewis, you all three of you talk about kind of reward system for societies, but how do you kind of plan to reform that? Olivia, you talk about having a reward system that would be meaningful and significant. I mean, how do you judge what is meaningful and significant for each society?
So I am president of the English Society, and I've been on the committee for 2 years, and I was on my JCR as well. So I know that there is a lot of hard work that goes into it. We obviously had, in second year, we had a gold rewards card from Martin, the activities officer then. This year we do still have stars. I don't really see it as a reward system, it's more just a way to get gold or silver for your society. But we are supposed to have a reward system from Katie Clubber, the current activities officer, but because it just kind of hasn't really come to fruition, there's not really any rewards in place at the moment. So what I'd want to do if elected was to put this back in place. I completely understand why Katie didn't want to print the cards again this year for sustainability reasons. However, I think next year it would need to be in place earlier, and I want to go directly to the societies, to the committees, to sports teams, even JCRs, and find out what they want. Because when I was on committee in second year, we had like 10% off. No, we got like a free drink at Mooch with a burger or something, but I don't really think that's significant enough, the amount of hours you put in to just get a free drink, or like 10% off at Portland Coffee. So I want to go directly to them and ask them what they want, and I would, if elected, do this before summer, so that when everyone was to come back and all the new kind of committees were in place, there's something there for them. As I said, ask them what they want.
Meg, you also talked about having rewards for societies, and you talked about having a Society of the Month or an SRS of the Month, which, as part of an SRS, we all thought was a really good idea, actually. So, once again, what would you do to have these rewards?
So, obviously, I'm part of an SRS as well. Carnivore, I literally can't even explain how much I adore Carnivore, literally from the bottom of my heart. And we can't really use the star scheme either. A lot of it doesn't apply to us. I've gone through and literally clicked, maybe if we could have those points, we could probably still only maybe get bronze or the last one, but maybe around that. So it doesn't reflect on the amazing work that I think that we do. Like Liv said, you put in ridiculous amounts of hours to get no rewards back. I'm the first carnival director in the whole of Carney Time to not take a sabbatical year while doing the role. I'm doing it alongside my degree, I'm doing it alongside my job. And we don't really get that much reward from the SU at all. Like, they don't promote other things, stuff like that. When I said a reward system, I meant more of a end of year extravaganza kind of thing, where you can put together a report. This is everything that we've done this year. The SU show you, oh, that's amazing, that you, and they go through it that way, and then they're like, okay, like, you can have this reward, you can have gold, you can have this, like, you've done amazing things. I think that by being a part of an SRS, I know the kinds of needs of them. Like, I know the president of Impact, the editor-in-chief of Impact, sorry. I know Katie Baxter from URN, Joe and Katie from NSTV. I know that you all feel, and including myself, that the reward system in place for societies just does not recognise the work of SRSs. And I completely understand the frustrations of being like, look at what we did, Carnival's Raising Give Week 3 weeks ago. You've not heard a peep about it on SU social media. We raised £1,400 in 7 days. I just want to... Sorry, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but I just really want to be able to put the, not just the societies, but the student-led groups, the student-run projects, the SRSs, I want every single person to be recognised.
How do we find the balance, though, just opening up this up to the whole panel, of it not necessarily just being a competition between societies and SRSs, and it not being kind of just about material gain? Because I think, as everyone said, everyone's part of societies or part of the SU, and you don't do it for the material gain. You do it because it's what you care about and you really enjoy it. So how do we find the balance between kind of rewarding societies but also not just making it about that?
To be honest, just having a post, being tagged in a post on the social media, being like, this society is amazing, look what they did this week, they have done this amazing thing, and that would like fill me with so much joy, being like, look at the SU recognising the hard work we've done. I don't want a free half pint of Cork at Mooch. I don't want things like that. That's not really showing what we've done at all, but the actual recognition from the SU by posting on their social media channels, giving us awards, giving us certificates, things like that.
Yeah, I just think it completely goes back to the point that the SU's marketing is very bad. They don't use the social media platforms as well as they can. Their engagement levels, as you see from sort of like reacts on Facebook and stuff like that, are very low. They've got a high number of subscribers and follows, etc. And if you translate to that engagements, maybe, of course, you've got students which have graduated and they no longer feel like they have anything to do with the Students' Union, apart from being alumni. If you translate that to percentages, it's very, very low. And it all just starts with marketing, which I believe should be, as I said, a part of the training curriculum for societies. I don't actually touch on rewards and recognition as much as the other candidates do. But it is something that I looked into, where a society is advertised by the university each week. You have a certain society which is available on a certain day during the week. So, this society, like Carnival, you raise so much money, and honestly, it's amazing what Carnival do. My big sister absolutely loved it. Unfortunately, I was a president and at Broadgate in first year, I wasn't allowed to get as involved as I wanted to. And I did have opportunities to, admittedly. I just found I was juggling a bit too much with other roles. But I do think that there is a lot to do. When you're recognised, as Meg said, you just feel so like special, like, oh my God, look at what we've done, we've been recognised. And I think it all begins with the SU just being flawed in its marketing and their inability to really recognise what is going on under their feet.
James and Liv, do you have anything to comment on this issue?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Just like even the small things, like being posted about, like we run Arts Ball for English, for loads of different societies, and we got a shout out on the, I think it was Instagram, and we were like, oh my God. So stuff like that, like small things. I know we've got the portfolio of engagement at the moment, which I haven't physically seen yet, but because yeah, I know you can't think you're not motivated by, you know, a free coffee at Portland. It doesn't do it. Like there needs to be the recognition, the constant kind of stuff like that, like what Lewis said in terms of like posting on the Facebook pages and stuff like that, like join the society, they do this, or stuff like that. Small things, but they do really pay off.
James?
Yeah, having been on society committees, like I was president of Philosophy Society last year, I'm chair of the LGBT Network this year, which it's not society, but we can do stars. Neither of those years we've gone for the stars system, because we didn't think that going for the stars system is the same as putting our members first and doing what would be best for them. But I'm aware that over the past few years, Martin and now Katie are doing work to try and tailor the star system so it will just happen on its own as societies do what they're meant to do. And I think there's a lot of work to be done there. I think a lot of work's been done, but I think the next activities officer will probably do a really good job of that.
Welcome back to your question time here on URM with your president candidates. We're going to jump straight into our final topic, which is the issue of kind of increasing engagement across campuses. So, James, you talk about having another kind of SU officer present on other campuses. How will you achieve this?
So specifically, I talk about like students' union presence on other campuses, like Sutton Bonington. That's going to start with something that I'm already working on, which is creating like satellite networks, essentially. So I'm meeting with Sutton Bonington next week to discuss this further. But that's the idea of, at the moment, the networks struggle to address their members on other campuses. So the LGBT networks, committee of 11 people, or volunteers and such, and it's really hard to engage with LGBT people where they feel comfortable, which is not a long way away. Like, it has to be at home, in inverted commas. So I'm setting up that. One of the things I would like to do is, if that goes well this year, expand that to the other networks, and that would have put the SU presence on Sutton Bonington for those who need it most first. And then I think you can build from there. Also treatment of the guild officers more as part-time officers, as they kind of are in the bylaws but don't seem to get the same treatment. I think that would be a good start.
So Meg and Lewis, you both kind of talk about Sutton Boddington campus. Meg, you talk about the farmers market idea and kind of trying to get more people to travel there. Do you think this is realistic though?
I do think that if there was a lot more promotion around the farmers market and more accessible ways of getting there, then more people would definitely go. I've been a few times and it's such a wonderful afternoon. Like, there was a stall there last time that literally did the best brownies that I've ever put into my mouth. And I can't wait to go tomorrow and hope that they're there. I do think that it can be feasible. Like, I do think that people will go if possible. I didn't mean to endorse James then. Definitely not.
We all just pointed at him in the
feasible
studio.
With an F.
Oh wow.
Now it's getting dirty.
I do think that people can go there. Like, I do think with the right promotion, with the right services, that people will definitely want to go there.
So engagement, as I said, is on my manifesto. Anyone can read it if they want to. It's available online. So my big sister, shout out if she's listening, I don't know. She graduated as I came to university, and she actually studied at Derby campus every single day. And Derby campus, I study at King's Meadow campus every now and again if I'm filming actual production stuff. We do have members of staff there, which is obviously important as well. And we can't forget, of course, City campus. And it's something that's kind of ignored by a lot of people running for positions.
I was just going to mention, none of you, mentioned Derby campus in your manifestos or City campus.
Obviously.
just to...
So I don't know what the hopper bus situation is with Derby, but it's very poor. If you're looking to get engaged with any part of the students' union, I'm just using Derby as an example, as it's the one I know. My sister constantly complained, and she actually ran for president based off the issues she found with trying to get support from the students' union for Derby campus. If you study on Derby campus, you find yourself having a 45-minute to an hour bus ride, which is slightly longer than Sutton Boddington. And if there's traffic, you could be sat on the bus for 2 hours. Who knows? It's a long way to go, and there's pretty much no representation over there for students at all. And you have pretty much 3 hopper buses a day. If you have one thing in the morning, you're stuck there for hours. You cannot get involved with societies to the extent you would like to, because you're having to commute. And this extends to King's Meadow campus, although it's a lot better because it's closer. It extends to City. It's actually still quite far away. But all of these students are missing out on getting involved in all these wonderful things that I've said the student union offers them. So essentially my way around it is offering more hopper buses, looking into that. I know that's something the community officer has done in previous years, and obviously it's very hard to work with NCT to try and do that. I'm looking into putting events at more accessible times, weekends. At the weekend, there is barely any hopper, well, there's limited hopper buses, and it just makes sense to provide more events at the weekend for those students so they can get involved to the extent that I would love to see them involved and engaged.
That actually builds on one of my manifesto points. So the current SU officer team are working on a campaign, maybe that's the wrong word, called SU to You.
Yeah.
That's like putting staff members, officers, things like that, going to other campuses, speaking to students on these campuses. And that is one of my main manifesto points under the Campus Unity branch, where I want to include the students on the other campuses. I wanted to do fortnightly drop-in sessions, similar to like office hours kind of thing, where the SU officers can go and students can come and raise their concerns or comments and things with them in a personal way. So maybe if that does go well, if the SUTU seems to work, seems to engage students more, it can extend to societies, SRSs, things like that, and they can then spend X amount of time on these campuses, engaging students, putting events on these students at these campuses?
With regards to that point, I just personally believe that it should be more often than fortnightly. I think that the student union very much fails to acknowledge certainly the unknown campuses that a lot of people don't know, the King's Meadow, the Derby, and also the City. It just fails completely to involve them. So what I propose is, rather than fortnightly, you would work from home, you provide facilities for the office team, and I think it extends to the students' union staff itself to commute and to also work from these places whenever they want, whenever they need to be. They need to be able to schedule meetings on Sutton Bonington and be accessible. You need to be able to talk to these student groups, because I've been speaking to Sutton Bonington presidents of societies over there. I've got quite a lot of people which actually commute from Lenton, get the hopper bus over there, and they have no engagement with the students' union. They feel failed by it. I'm sure at Hustings the other day you saw the community candidate's speech. It was very passionate. It was let down, and that's what students feel like, especially on these unknown campuses. And it just begins with identifying it. The students' union fails to do that, and it increases to, I believe, literally having this dynamic workforce where you can literally work from whatever campus you would like, and it's encouraged to do so, rather than fortnightly.
James?
Yeah, I just want to build on that like another step and say the important thing that I think about it is it's not just bringing the students' unions to these other campuses. It's not sending officers to Derby or Sutton Bonington. It's like enabling them to have it there themselves, as in they are the students' union. Like, it's not about the LGBT plus network visiting Sutton Bonington from University Park. It's about having an LGBT plus network established in the student body at these campuses.
However, do you not think that that will make those campuses more separate?
Yeah.
And it won't actually unite the kind of Nottingham campuses and student body? It will just make them more separate, because by having their own almost students' union, that's making it kind of like a separate thing.
Well, they already have that. That's what the associated bodies are. Their own officer teams, essentially. That's how they function. But the feeling is that it's two separate. Like, you've got the associated bodies, like the Sutton Bonington Guild and at UNED at Derby. And I think what we're doing at the moment is we've got these things there and we're sending officers, like we visit for the balls and at dinners and have meetings there and such. But it's about engaging the students, not just the officers, not the student leaders there, but all the students at these campuses, and allowing them to form part of the groups, which is the networks, such as the networks.
So the students' union available primarily across University Park. I don't think to the best extent across Jubilee and also Sutton Bonington, which are acknowledged campuses. Do you not think that the students' union sort of continuing this approach of very much sort of isolationism, we are University Park, do you not think that we're not appealing to students to come and experience every single thing we have to offer on University Park? So it's all well and good saying, right, we've got these committees over here, we've got UNAD, we've got the Guild. Do you not think that the students' union, by not extending out, people will not want to come to University Park to experience the societies, to experience just the lovely campus we have, if they feel so isolated by the students' union?
I think that
if you get what I mean.
I think I do. I think that would be great, but I also think that they shouldn't have to if they don't want to. Like, they shouldn't have to come here for support for if they're a BME student. Like, yeah, they can come here if they want to join in some societies. That would be cool. The hopper buses are good for that. But these essential services the union provides, which I think are the most important services the union provides, and attend to those who need the union most, ought to be established among the memberships there.
Liv, you don't actually mention other campuses in your manifesto, but as we've heard, this is clearly an issue, and about how to like increase this engagement and also make the other campuses still feel part of the student body. How would you tackle this?
Yeah, I don't specifically mention it, but it's something that keeps cropping up, and it's something I'm very much aware of. I think, James, I think you've got a really good point. Like, there obviously are these bodies there, and I think a physical hub would work really well. It is a tricky one, because we've obviously got the officers here who resemble the students' union, and to send them to other campuses, great, but then they won't be there all the time. They aren't a support network there. Like, there's a student or a committee member that needs, you know, the activities officer, but she's not there, or he's not there, because they're on Uni Park. Like, it's really problematic. So it's a really difficult one, trying to find the right balance between do we send kind of our officers that we see on Uni Park all the time to the other campuses to be almost part-time there, which would be really beneficial, but then they're not, they may not be there when those people need them as well.
Would you have like a plan of how to tackle that per se?
I will have one. I'm a bit on the spot at the moment, but it is definitely one that that needs looking into, and I think it is a really difficult one because in terms of we need to talk to what to the other bodies, the other campuses, and what they think would work best. Again, communication is so crucial in this situation. Yeah.
Lewis, I can see you raring to go.
I guess this all just comes from it hits quite close to home, and it's very disappointing. I mean, to see that people don't acknowledge Derby, for example, from my sister and all the other campuses. I'm not suggesting we abolish the things that are currently there and replace it with dynamic moving officers and staff. I'm suggesting we work together with them more closely by being there. We are dynamic in the fact that we're there to help you grow. We're there to bring the Students' Union, which has a lot of power on University Park, we're there to provide that support to the people on them campuses, enabling them to grow and enabling them to do the services to even better extents than they are doing. So you have people on Sutton Bonington, for example, I'm going back to the community candidate the other day, who feel failed, and you have students not getting engaged because there is no student union representation, and that is just unacceptable. These are campuses which are not being acknowledged by the students union. That is just unacceptable. They're part of the university.
I completely agree with everything that you're all saying, like definitely putting the officers, definitely like having like some form of SU hub on these other campuses. I do think that like my fortnightly point is maybe the one that could work at first, like just trying to implement it as slowly as possible. You can't instantly put a hub on these campuses and be like, boom, we're moving all these people to Sutton Bonton. But I don't mention Derby, I don't mention City in my manifesto, and I can only apologise to the students who study on those campuses. I've spoken to students on Jubilee, I've spoken to students on SB and how they feel excluded, and I'd be more than happy to speak to students on those other campuses. But Lewis, you are going on about how Derby is so important to you, yet you don't mention it in your manifesto.
That is very true. It is the forgotten campus, unfortunately. Well, not the forgotten campus. There's a few of them. But it's equally important. It's part of the university, and it's on all of us, essentially. All of us are at fault for not mentioning it. It's just, I guess, not one of my biggest manifesto points. It's not something that I'm aiming to really go for.
James, I can see you have a point over that.
Just to clear that up, what I mean is that I'm obviously got my manifesto points, which I've put down. And obviously you pick up things as you go into the role, but they're the things that were more important.
I think this is going to be the final point of the evening. So, James, would you...
Yeah, I was just following up on what you were all saying with the visiting and that kind of stuff. And I know, like, I'm the LGBT plus representative of University Park and all of the other campuses. And I know that me visiting is not going to solve the issues that are there. Mm-hmm. I do visit, but that is not enough. And that's why I think we need change from the members, grassroots change. And my plan, which I'm currently developing, currently have bits of, want to work with the campus, see what would work specifically there. I feel like that would be good to trial at Sutton Bonington first. And then I've got plans to extend that plan to the other campuses with more specific tailorings.
Okay, well, thank you so much, guys, for coming on. Do you all want to kind of give a closing statement, maybe just summing up your manifesto and, I suppose, what you're looking forward to about the rest of the week?
So this week has already been absolutely incredible. I've met some incredible people. The other candidates are all absolutely amazing. Their manifestos are strong, and I feel very lucky to be going up against them. Just to summarise my manifesto, three main points: campus unity, wellbeing and welfare, and rewards and recognition. I really hope that my passion and enthusiasm for the SU really comes through. I'd be happy to answer any questions on my social media, Miss McMeg, SU Prez. I'll be able to predict what you're going to ask anyway. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you very much for listening. Just sum up my manifesto very quickly. Transparency, I mean, we pretty much run through all of them in the show, but if you're not listening to the full 2 hours, transparency, sponsorships, engagement, welfare, safety, and you. Yeah, of course, if you want to look into them more in more depth, they're all available online. Yeah, and I'm sure I'll see you around campus. Thanks for listening again, and good luck to the other candidates. They've got some amazing manifestos. Do read them, because it's really important that you're voting on the manifesto.
Thank you for listening. So my social media is Vote Live for Prez, and my manifesto spells out Clue for my Clueless themed campaign. So I've got Care, Lenten, Us and Elections, and my manifesto is all online. If you have any questions, you can message me. My name's Olivia Narayan, or Liv. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and just to summarise the theme of my manifesto, it's that I want to put the members of the union first, make transparent, make it functional, and make it member-led. And I feel like the most important thing to vote on is reading the manifestos and seeing how tangible the things in the manifestos are, and just choose whoever you would think would do the best for the job. Thank you.
SU Elections Question Time. What do your candidates stand for?